Hey there, I'm Dominique Saint-Pierre, and you're listening to Go Podcast. Today I talk with Mark Carpenter, and we discuss about game in Go, and it is library Ibiton UI. Hello, Gophers! This is Dominique Saint-Pierre, and you know, I have a special guest today. To be completely frank, I was going to do a solo episode on Ibiton very recently, and I saw a comment on Reddit, and I have Mark Carpenter with me today, and thank you very much for accepting this invitation, Mark.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. I'm kind of excited to talk about the library.
Oh, absolutely. So Mark is the author and maintainer of the, you know, Ibiton UI, and I will start by just asking you if you can, you know, present yourself a little bit, give us some background. I like to ask my guests to, you know, to have some bias a little bit towards Go, but you know, it's not necessary. I think we all like to tweet a little bit about you.
All right. Yeah. Sure. So, hello, name's Mark. I've been a software developer for about 20 years now, most of that's actually been in Java. And I've never actually worked in Go professionally, so that's probably a little different from some of your other guests, but I became pretty much an enthusiast because I wanted to learn the language. I saw it when it was originally posted, and I've always wanted to learn how to use it, so I made an effort to learn how to use it. Along the way, I've taken ownership of Ibiton UI. I've built a couple tools for game development in the language, and like some simple blog software stuff, you know, the standard like learning the language kind of stuff. So
yeah. So nice. So you have worked all your career in Java. Is that right?
That's correct. Well, mostly.
That's a long time for Java.
Yeah, right. I actually started off as a C# developer for like a year. I got hired on at this job to be a C# developer, and then like the day I started, they're like, "Oh no, we're a Java shop now. Learn Java." And oh. I've been there ever since.
I'm curious to hear and you know, even if you only had 1 year at C#, what is your comparison? What is your thought? Because I'm coming from the other way around, and I'm also, you know, near 20 years, a little bit than 20 years. So we seems to be very similar. But myself, I was on the Microsoft stack at the beginning, and always kept far from Java for you know, no really particular good reason and things like that. It you know, it just never really happened. But I'm curious to hear how was that transition went for you.
You know, thankfully it was like a small startup shop, so there wasn't a lot of expectations. It actually went really well. The C# and Java, the syntax was very similar. The main differences was learning the libraries and some of the nuances around Java. So, I mean, it was actually, I thought it was easier to go from C# to Java than to pick up Go from Java.
Interesting. Why is that? Is it because of the object orientation, for example, in those languages?
It is, and the syntax is similar. The general structure of the applications is very similar. Like, and you actually have similar libraries as well. Like there's Hibernate and InHibernate for doing right. data models and stuff like that. Frankly, it's just really similar. I do kind of miss C# sometimes because I thought the UI integration with C# was better, just a lot better than with Java. But I mean, that's part of the you know, .NET running on Windows machines. They can do that, whereas Java is supposed to be able to run on anything, right. And when they try to create Swing, it was just kind of a giant mess.
Right. Okay, so when you say UI, you mean building, you know, GUI application like desktop, Windows Form, and WPF.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also missing sometimes C#, to be completely frank here. For me, the part that I really enjoy was when they introduced Link Queue at some point. So I always worked in you know, database heavy or data heavy companies and whatnot. And but
I get that Link. It's beautiful, or Link Q. I'm not actually sure the proper way to pronounce
well,
it.
Well, yeah, maybe it's Link. Yeah,
it's fantastic. It's really well designed, and I think I've always thought it worked really well. Over the years, Java has been incorporating more and more stuff like that with its Stream APIs, which is nice. But it never quite felt as integrated as Link did.
Yeah. I believe that's also why I was a little bit attracted in Elixir for line of business application as well, because they, in my opinion, their ORM is it seems to be based a little bit on Link, if I can say that. But you know, I don't have a huge experience in Elixir in production, but I always enjoy their the way that, you know, the data is flowing in there. Let's jump. I think we have to talk a little bit more on C Sharp and Java. That's fine. Let's talk about a bit of UI. So how would you describe the library itself?
So the library is a user interface for video games. It's not built to be a generic user interface, graphical user interface, front end application. That's not the use case for Ebitten UI. It is built completely to be a UI layer on top of Ebit Engine or Ebitten. I think it's Ebit Engine now, to be on top of that system for building games. So because of that, it has some like different design choices than something like Fine or Wales, which are two of the other really well-known UI systems for Go.
I'm interested to unpack that a lot, because to be completely frank, when I saw your post on Reddit, I tried the library and the first thing that came to mind was, wow, this thing seems to be probably the easiest way to build desktop application with Go. That was, and I'm currently doing a small game with my younger kid. You know, it's a known fact that I'm a blind person, and wow, a blind person is programming a game. Yeah, I'm not doing any images and whatnot. So my kid is very attracted by pixel art these days and things like that. So I'm just programming in Go a bit. When I saw you know, the results, you know, buttons and I know that Fine and Wales are the go-to thing here, but I have tried them, and to be honest, I'm surprised that you're saying that it's not the use case. Could it be?
So
an alternative or not?
It could be. It absolutely could be. That's not the main use case for it. It's primarily designed, like I said, to be a UI for games. But it absolutely could be if that was your intention, if you wanted to build it like that. And I may be a little biased, but I actually do think Ebitten UI is easier to use than the other two. Like with Wales, that one is essentially just a browser packaged into an EXE. So you get the standard stack of a Go server and like some sort of HTML front end, like Vue or something like that. So you're still building a full stack application, and it's not like just a GUI app.
Yeah.
And then Fine. Fine's really neat, but it does absolutely take over your system. Like you do a fine.run, like to run the system. Like it takes over everything. Ebitten UI tries not to do that. It tries to be as easy as possible. Again, because it's typically used as an overlay on something else.
Right. And I haven't looked much at the code. So again, I have just, you know, I've just run the demo. Mm-hmm. Is it like using the same kind of construct as the as a game, like a bit engine? I don't know how to say that.
Right.
But is it like you kind of have a draw and an update function? Is it like that for the GUI as well?
It is. So it ties into the update function. Basically, you call UI.update and a UI.draw inside the draw method from Ebitten engine. And that's where the system's doing its work to draw the UI onto the screen or to update and capture like mouse clicks and keyboard inputs, things like that.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds pretty sexy to me compared to Fine. Like you said, Fine seems to take over the entire, well, which is normal. It takes like the main thread, if we can say that. But
yeah,
what I like so far, because returning to my small project, we started with Pygame because I thought that my kid was going to write some code at some point, but it turns out that, you know, it's not like that. It's just images and graphics and things like that. So I said, you know, it's a good time to try this this Ebitten thing. And I really appreciate the simplicity of having, you know, two function, the draw and update, which lots of games are like that. But now you're talking about a full GUI application that you just create a struct and you attach two function like that, and you can start to compose some pretty nice I don't know, you know, maybe I would even say like decoupled logic in your GUI, which sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, and actually I'm doing that in my own games. So I separate out, like, I can't create custom widgets based off of the existing ones that are provided by the library to build out my game. And it's all composed inside its own struct with its own methods, and I can just call that. Like, it's very composable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what is your game, actually? And you know, can you tell a little bit how you started this UI kit, actually? What happened there?
All right, a little bit of a long story, but I can start from the beginning if you want.
Sure.
All right, so I started learning Go, and I mentioned it earlier, I did a dumb like blog kind of app thing just to test login and all that kind of stuff and working through networking with Go. And as I was working through it, I'm like, okay, this project's kind of boring. And I decided, hey, why don't I make a game?
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, I love MMOs. Like, that's my favorite genre of game. So let's try to start with that. Like, I know it was a project I didn't think would ever have a finish. And that's actually one of the biggest reasons why I chose it, is because it's something I could continually work on and use to improve my skills with language and with the libraries. So I chose that, and I built the back end servers, because there's actually four servers that support it, talking to each other with NATs, if you've heard of that library.
Yeah.
So I built all of that, and for the front end, I was using Godot, and it was nice. It actually worked really well, but the networking section of Godot is challenging if you want to have your own custom back end. Hmm. It had the ability to do like WebSockets for network communications, but if I wanted to use like something like Enet, where I could use UDP communication back and forth, and while I was able to hack it together, it was just not great. And then they released a newer version of Godot about a year and a half ago, something like that. And when they did, it completely broke all my tile maps and everything I had built. Like, it just completely destroyed my game. And at that point, I just kind of got frustrated and said, I'm done with Godot, and started looking for other frameworks. And I really wanted to stick in with Go, because the back end was in Go, and I thought there would be a lot of synergy with the front end and back end both being in the same language. So started looking around, found EBIT and EBIT Engine, and tested it out. I'm like, okay, yeah, this works great. I can do tile maps. I can do all the physics and all the standard stuff you want to do. But when I started looking at building a UI on top of it, because it's an MMO, it has chat boxes, it has settings menus, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't find a good library for it that would just do the things I needed it to do. And then eventually I actually stumbled on the original version of EBITEN UI. So I'm not the original author of EBITEN UI. However, the original version was deprecated 3 years ago. About a year and a half before I found it, the original author, kind of abandoned it and stopped working in Go or with EBITEN. And, so I started playing with it. I realized, okay, this actually has a really nice framework. Like half the stuff doesn't work, but it has a really nice framework and I like working with it. So I started working on my game and building my game and my UI in this library. And I realized I was making a lot of really nice changes to make things work as you'd expect them to work and adding new widgets, etc. And I wanted to push that back up to the main line, but it was deprecated. So I really didn't want to keep a fork, but I also thought there's no other real good UI libraries, in my opinion, for EBITEN. And I don't want the fork to be the main one. So I reached out to the original author, and after a little bit of back and forth, he agreed to give the keys to the kingdom, essentially. He passed ownership of EBITEN UI over to me, and I've been maintaining it ever since.
Yeah, that's a great story, to be frank. I mean, this is very interesting. So, but there's a lot of things that I want to unpack in here.
All right.
Oh yeah. So first of all, the story with Goto is pretty sad, but I'm curious to know why you chose Go for your backend server for this MMO. What was the reasoning there?
Actually, really good reasoning is Go is very good at networking. I mean, it's built to handle a lot of network interactions. Like, that's its primary use case, and it worked very well for this. And doing a lot of threading and things like that, which align really well with building a server in the back end. And frankly, I just wanted to. Like, I like working with Go, and This was like a project that seemed like a lot of fun to work on in Go.
How were you testing your server, you know, while you were probably not having any client to play the game in a sense? Were you using a lot of unit testing and whatnot? You know, what was the development cycle was like?
So actually, I built them hand in hand, the front end and the back end hand in hand. So I built the networking scaffolding, basically, to do the handshakes and create the connections and stuff. But when I was doing that, I did it on the client and the back end at the same time. So that made it actually really easy to test, because I could just run the front end and did it connect? Yeah. Okay, I'm good. right. So once I got the scaffolding done for the networking, I started adding in essentially my own personal protocol, using the message pack library to create these packets of data that I'm sending back and forth. And as I was adding new features to the game, I would add new message types to that protocol. And it's set up so that the main server just essentially takes those messages and keeps the connection with that user, but passes it to a backend using messaging framework NATS to send the messages to the appropriate backend servers. Like, so the front server that they connect to, I can have as many of those as I want, and just scale that horizontally as much as necessary, because it's just the front door, basically. I have a data server that connects to the database system that saves off, you know, the user information periodically, or is used to load the information on you know, startup, that kind of thing. But it's all orchestrated through that NATS messaging framework I'd mentioned earlier.
Interesting. Is the server responsible for, you know, all the object in the map and things like that? So the positioning of things and you know, if a player is moving, to replicate that to other user, is it done directly there? Does the rendering is done on the server side?
No. Well, yes and no. So, like I mentioned, the front end server, the first server, I call it the game server, doesn't handle that. It's actually sending the messages back to the appropriate backend server that's associated with the area they're in. So the world's chunked into multiple different chunks, essentially. And each of those chunks is responsible for the information about the characters and creatures and stuff in that. I'm going to use the nomenclature zone. They're in that specific zone. Then that zone server is responsible for tracking all that information and keeping track of all that. Mm-hmm. So I run like four or five of the exact same code base. The only difference is a data file that I associate with it, which has the map information for collision checking and you know, NPC information. Speaking of maps and NPC information, I actually built an application in Go that does all that for me. It allows me to, you know, drag and drop my NPCs into the right spots and set up spawning zones and like loot tables and all of that inside this highly customizable app that it's all like the entire backend's written in Go, front end's in Vue. I'm actually really proud of it.
Nice. Yeah, sounds pretty cool. I mean, so the collision detection is done on the server side, you're saying then?
Yes. I'm doing some collision detection on the server side. It's kind of more high level. I'm not as fine grained as I am on the client. So it's doing like reality checks. Like you can't go this far off the map.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Eventually depending on how things go, I might add more detailed, collision detection on the back end. But for right now, most of it's on the front end. Like right now, the major detection I'm doing for physics on the back end is, are they actually close enough to the NPC to hit them? That kind of thing. Or to talk to this merchant.
That's great. So when you say that the front end is in Vue, so I thought it was going to be in Ibiton, because
that library or that application I built to build the build the map and build the world, that one is in Vue.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like a world builder that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
To create your file that you drop on the server at the end of the day, I guess.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so Godot, you know, it's crew your tile and your images and whatnot. So you decide at some point, well, let's try to see if there's something else, right? And because of your server is written in Go, you tend to go with Ibiton. But have you tried anything else? You know, I know that Raylib gets a lot of mention these days, and even in Go. So I mean, have you tried that?
So I tried it a little bit when I started working on my MMO's front end, but the reason I leaned away from it is because it's a C it's a C library that just has bindings in Go.
Yeah.
So it's not built specifically for Go. And that was a concern for me. My concern was, hey, what if the person maintaining these bindings either gets behind or gets deprecated? And hey, there's this new feature that was just recently added, but the bindings haven't been updated. And, who knows when the person's going to be able to do it. So it was just, I had concerns about using that because of those reasons, because it is a binding directly to a C library. Whereas Ibiton is built for Go and runs in Go. And recently they've been working on something called Purgo, where they're getting rid of their C bindings and doing everything directly in Go, which is super interesting. Huh. I think it's actually set up that way in Windows right now, and they're working on other systems to enable that.
That's nice. Yeah, that's also, you know, it matches a little bit my experience. So I'm developing in, I'm also using Windows for my screen reader and whatnot, but I'm always inside the subsystem for Linux, the WSL. And
right.
I'm able to set the Gorch and the Go Arch and the Go Go OS to Windows, and now I can build the game, and it's running natively on Windows directly. So I don't need to have anything to run it. So I find that very, very great. So that was a little bit a concern for me with Raylib, and yeah, the fact that it's, you know, there's a C there, a C dependencies, that it's not as easy to build, especially cross-platform like that, to be frank. So
yeah, I actually haven't gotten my front end to run cross-platform yet. My back end runs in Linux or Windows or whatever, it doesn't care. But my front end is running in Windows, and I've been trying to expose it to other operating systems, but I've had problems getting the build to work properly because of some of the CGo dependencies I have from Enet. I've been using the Enet library for networking, and because it's a, you know, CGo connectivity thing, I'm having issues getting it to build properly, and I kind of just gave up because it wasn't a high priority to look at later. But at some point, I'm probably going to get rid of Enet as well, because of the same reason why I chose Ebitten, is because I don't like having those CGo those connections. It causes build problems, and things aren't updated at the same time because they're, you know, just bindings. They're not the actual library.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you on that. All right. So at some point you have your game rewritten. Were you very far away with your Godot version? How much time it took you to rewrite that to Ebitten?
So it took me a little longer than I anticipated. I mean, in the end, it took me about 6 months. But okay. part of that was because I had to rewrite a significant portion of Ebitten UI to support some of the features I needed. Things like there's a window widget, which is what it sounds like. It's a widget that you can drag and drop across the screen and have other widgets inside it. So like a pop-up window, basically.
Mm-hmm.
When I originally took over the library and started working on it, you couldn't have other input widgets within it. Like, it just didn't work. And you also couldn't drag and drop it either, or resize it. It's none of that was implemented. It had the base framework of the idea of what a window was, but none of the actual implementation. And that was kind of what happened with a lot of the widgets within the library. So I ended up having to do a lot of that cleanup before I could implement it in my game. So I would implement what I could in the game's client, and then when I got to a point where there's some UI elements I needed to add, I would go switch over to Ebitten UI to work on that, to get that enabled, and then, you know, deploy that, do a release, and go over back to my game and pick that in and start utilizing it. So it took a little time to get Ebitten UI to a place where I think it's in a really functional state. Obviously, there's, you know, more work to be done, but I think it's in a very nice state at this point, and I've had no problems integrating and finishing catching up to where my client originally was.
Yeah. Were you having the total ownership of the project at this moment?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I guess. Yeah, totally.
While I was doing this, I actually did get people giving pull requests along the way. So people have been using it, and they like it enough. They're like, hey, let's add this to it. It's like, all right, perfect. So I've actually had some pretty good interaction with the users of the library on my Discord. They've been giving really good feedback and helping out with PRs here and there.
So was the Discord came with the ownership of the repo as well, or you started that from scratch?
I started that one from scratch. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I mean,
so the only thing what came with the library when I took ownership was the main repo and then a repo for the docs. So there was a basic docs page that was put together. I believe it only had one page at that point, maybe two, but has since been enhanced quite a bit. But that was it. It was just those two repos and then nothing else. So since then, I've just kind of been trying to build it out and sharing it with the world and sharing it with those in the EBITDEN Discord as well. So they know it exists and they can use it if they want.
Well, yeah, totally. I mean, this is great because, I mean, all games need some UI at some point.
Yeah, most of them do. I mean, I have definitely seen some people just implement the very basics on their own, like basic buttons and stuff. I actually kind of feel bad for them because it's like, that's almost a waste of time, man. You could get that very, very cheaply if you just use this library.
Oh, totally, yeah.
But I get it. A lot of people come to a tool like EBITEN because they want to build a lot of it themselves.
I mean,
that's part of the reason I came to the language and the library.
Yeah, it's a good learning curve, to be frank, to start from scratch, compared to having to learn a framework or any kind of tool. I mean, it's nice to understand what's going on. I think EBITEN is that type of... We can compare that to any kind of frameworks on the website. It's nice on Go that, you still can go very, very deep and understanding, a little bit of the HTTP stack and whatnot there.
Definitely. And I will say, I really appreciate what they've done with EBITEN. It's just so simple to use and it makes so much sense when you look through its documents. Like building this UI library is very easy because of the work that they've done on their library.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that I've seen it. It was a long time ago. It was sold like, it was talking about the NES system, like a 8-bit game like the NES and things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I seen it and I was like, I don't know. but it's way more than that. I mean, it's... for 2D games, I mean, it just works.
It really is. I mean, any kind of 2D game works really well with it. I've seen like some isometric stuff. I've seen just straight 2D. And I've seen a couple other things. Someone's built like a rudimentary 3D engine, kind of like a Doom kind of engine in it, which is kind of neat. And right. I recently saw someone's building a 3D mech game in the language as well. If you look in their show and tell forum, it's on there. It looks really cool.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive, to be frank, and it's very simple. So, if you're listening to that and you don't really know it, and you like to, to write some small games and whatnot, it's a great way to start. I would admit, Pi Game is nice as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, but you still have a lot to read and things like that. But EBITEN is just simple.
Yes, and I try to make EBITEN UI simple too. I've done a lot of things recently. So people come into the library and a lot of them are newer developers and don't really know how to read code from other libraries and stuff like that, don't really want to. So I've done a lot of things to try to make the usage of the library simpler. So there are demos for every single widget, and you can actually connect to them on the web and see every single widget we have as a WASM embedded into your web page application for every single widget, which is kind of nice. And then you can look at the source code for each of the widgets with comments to explain what the different functionality does. So that actually took a lot of time to get that working and to get that put together. But I'm really happy that that's out there now.
Yeah, it's really helpful to see a demo like that for sure, because you can just see what you can do with it. To be frank, the WASM exporting of Ibiton is really nice. I mean, have you any issues to output the library? Was there any kind of tricks that you needed to change, or any problem that you had?
Actually, yeah, there was a really big pain to get this working on WASM for input dialogue. So anything where you type into the screen, it didn't really work on mobile. So it worked fine on desktop as it was, but if you pulled it up on a mobile browser, it wouldn't work because the keyboard wouldn't pop open. So I actually spent a week and a half working on it to get the silly keyboard to pop open when you click inside the text box. And that was challenging. I had to do some of the JavaScript interop stuff with Go to get it to actually call the right methods to pop it open. And and then do the interaction to say, when they hit this button, copy it from like this hidden input widget into the actual widget on the screen, and back and forth, and dealing with the fact that you can move the caret in different places and making sure that the caret position was aligned properly so that if you hit backspace, it would actually backspace the right character.
Right. That does not sound fun at all.
that was a challenge. I think that's actually the biggest challenge I've dealt with this library, was getting that to work.
Nice. And other than that, I mean, it looks exactly the same on, I guess, Linux, Windows, and Mac, probably?
It does.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat how it works. If you're good for me to go into that a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So basically what it does is it has an update loop where it's going through and capturing your mouse clicks, keyboards, interactions, and then it's reacting to that on the draw loop. So in the draw loop, all it's doing is just drawing pictures to the screen, which is how Ibiton is put together. So it is kind of a layered approach. You have this image, and it's using all that information and the setup that you did to position your widgets where you want them on the screen, and it's just straight up drawing them onto the screen. So the draw is actually really simple. It's take this image, draw it for these dimensions, and move on to the next one. It's kind of nice. I really like working with it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's the same for all the widget inside of there. So is there any drop down? So for instance, when is the library, I guess, is handling when there's a mouse click, and now you are drawing the option beside the drop down or below, I guess.
Yeah, it handles combo boxes. It handles right click context menus as well, and drag and drop, all those kind of functionality. It's all generally built off of that window object I mentioned at the very beginning. So it all utilizes that window to handle all that behind the scenes. So with Ibit Engine, everything is positioned based off of a container and a layout for that container. So you nest containers to put widgets in the proper places, and that's just generally how it works. Windows, on the other hand, are outside of that process, outside of that container process. So when you add a window to the system, it gets drawn on top of everything else at the very end. So you draw your UI, then you create a window, and it will draw that at the end to put it on top of everything else. So because of how that window works, like when you right click on something, it's actually just popping open a new window with the elements that you've like requested to be in that window. So in the back end, it's all just a window, but on the front end, it just looks like a combo box or a or a tooltip or a context menu.
Interesting. So if someone wants to create their own widget, do they have to start from this window structure? Or
so they don't have to start with a window. They could start with pretty much anything. There are a few interfaces that are needed to be implemented, but if you implement those interfaces, then you can add them to a container. And once it's added to a container, at that point, it'll start being drawn to the system. So as long as you implement the interfaces, you're good. Window, I like using Window. All the stuff I utilize in my MMO is based off Windows, but it doesn't have to be. A good example, someone wanted a labeled checkbox. So Originally the UI, like 8-bit UI, didn't have a labeled checkbox. It just wasn't a widget. You just had the checkbox and you had a label. Someone really, really wanted that capability to have like the label, like if you click on the label, it'll check the checkbox to have that tie-in. So they created a new widget called the label checkbox, where it's the two widgets composed together and some code to tie them in together for like the click events and stuff. So that one, they didn't start with a window. They just started with, I think they started with the checkbox and added label information to it and added the drawing of the label.
So that means that the click event is accessible to this checkbox itself. So it's not only trapped by Ibiton UI, but it's also available for the user to do whatever they want to do with that.
Absolutely. So there's a base object called a widget, which has all of the mouse events. So mouse in, mouse out, mouse pressed, mouse released.
Nice.
And you can tie in, add as many events, event handlers to those as you want. And it's built so that you can, as you're defining the object, you can specify those handlers as you're defining them.
Okay, so is that what you were saying with the loop? I guess you are checking for those property in inside this loop, so you can react that this widget is pressed, for example, or
yes, yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay, that's great. So this widget structure is probably something that is a good blank canvas to start a completely custom widget, for example.
Every widget, like every new widget, has a widget. So that's how it's built. So it has a widget. So it's not extending it. Like you don't just put it into the struct. You like have a widget object within the struct.
Right.
But yes, that is the ideal way to start a new one. There is some documentation on that in the on the webpage. It's not the greatest, though. Honestly, if someone wanted to create a new widget, my strongest suggestion would be to take a look at either label checkbox or just a button and start with that and go from there to add what you wanted. So when I was playing with the library, like learning the library in the first place, that's actually how I learned it, is because there were two widgets I wanted to see if I could implement. And once I was able to implement those two, I was able, like, it convinced me I wanted to continue with the library. So like a progress bar, that seemed to be pretty simple to me, just two images, one fills up the other, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't have it. So I'm like, all right, I'll build this. I'll build a progress bar. And that's pretty much what I did. I started with button and ripped out all the buttony stuff and added in the what I needed for a progress bar. I just used that as a starting point.
Nice. So I suppose there's some probably public function to set the percentage of the progress bar for example, if you are coming from an external I don't know, if you are creating this game and this progress bar is I don't know, the health of a character, for example, you need to set the value from the game loop.
Yes. It's not actually setting the percentage, it's setting the value. So you set a max value and the current value.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it'll calculate the percentage to draw based off of that.
Nice.
There are some other things along with that. Like there's a change event. So when that changes, you can capture that event and do something with it. And I've used that in the past to add like a label on top to show the percentage as a number. That's not built into the progress bar because not everyone needs it. And it's easily added. You know, you can easily add it yourself if you need it. So that was one of those design decisions I made along the way. Like, I don't want to make these widgets terribly heavy because then it just kind of makes it more difficult to use in the long run. Like, you don't need to have it doesn't need to have a label. It doesn't really add anything when you can just easily add one yourself if you need it.
Right. And how is that usable from the caller point of view? So are we passing an inline function, for example, to this event, or how does the widget call an external function?
So you can either pass in an anonymous function to the widget as you're creating it, or you can create a function in one of the packages or off of a struct and pass that in. As long as it matches the signature, it will accept it.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that seems to, yeah. Returning to our first, attempt at discussing GUI application with Fine. This to me feels very good as a desktop GUI way of building things. So I know that you have said that it's probably not meant to be that, but I don't know. To me, it seems to be an interesting aspect that maybe it was not meant for that originally, but it could certainly play that role. And because the concept and the pattern in how it's built, it's so simple. It's respecting the Go philosophy of just, it just works and it's just simple. There's not much mental model that I need to build to understand what's going on there. It's just it's just very, very straightforward in my opinion.
I like to think so. There are definitely a few challenges I've definitely faced along the way that I know some of the users are facing. And there's two of them. I'm still trying to figure out the best way to solve them. But working on it. Like, one of the reasons why I say it's mostly for games is because of these two issues. So the first one is it doesn't have a default UI, basically. So yeah, it's almost a headless UI system. It expects you to provide the images for, like, what does a window look like? So it at this point, it expects the user to provide those images on what to draw. So that's a bit challenging for newer developers who are not used to this system. And it can be a bit of a roadblock. Like, there is a demo application that does have a lot of these UI elements that people can use, but it's definitely not going to fit the style of most people's games. It's kind of like a sci-fi kind of UI look. That's one of the challenges that I'm trying to deal with now. I've actually started working on like a theming system And the idea is that instead of having to provide these images on like every button you create, you just say, this is what a button looks like. These are the images to use for every button in the game. And it just kind of goes from there. And long term, once that functionality is added, hopefully, the idea is I'll put out a new repo of just Ebitten UI themes that people can add new themes to. And like add a light theme, add a dark theme to the system so that people can just pull in and start utilizing. So hopefully that would help make the system a little bit easier for people to use and make me feel a lot more comfortable saying it'd be good for a desktop application.
Yeah. This sounds awesome, to be frank. But you know, I mean, it's not terrible to provide, I think you were saying like 9 images. At the end of the day, you are building your own kind of GUI style. So it's normal that you need to provide some design.
Right. Well, I think something like, you know, fine, they have the standard like system UI kind of look, where this library doesn't provide that right now. I mean, we could, but right now that's just not something that's provided because that's not really the focus of the UI, of this system. But hopefully once this whole theming thing is put together, that's something we could provide in the future.
Yeah, sure.
The other thing is there's certain widgets that people tend to expect on front-end applications that are not super necessary for games. Things like grids. A lot of desktop applications shockingly have a lot of grids. And that's just not something that's supported right now. There's a few other like widgets and container types that we don't support yet, which is, you know, like that one, which is why I'm not comfortable saying it's for desktops. It's not really a competitor with like Fine or Wales at this point.
Oh, sure. And I guess also, you know, the tree icon and the file open save browser dialogues. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the type of things you don't really see in games and it's not super necessary. And
right.
Like the window widget, while very useful for games, is not terribly useful for a desktop UI. That kind of style application's gone out of favor a long time ago.
Sure. Sure, but I mean, I hear you, but I don't know. I will of course integrate it into the small game that I'm building. But I don't know. It feels good. So far, it seems to be nice.
I mean, it definitely is, and you absolutely can build a front end GUI in it, like not related to games. It's absolutely something that can be done. It's just going to take a little extra work of the type most people doing that wouldn't be used to. So like providing what your UI is supposed to look like, that kind of thing. But if someone wanted to do that and wanted to build a front-end application using this library, absolutely. I see no reason why they couldn't at this point.
Yeah, sure. And you get all the sounds from Ebitten as well. I mean, there's something to do there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I don't know. So any challenge that you're facing, challenges probably with maintaining an open source project, you know, are you looking for a contributor? Is it hard for you to get some kind of traction? How is it going?
So I'm actually getting a lot of traction of people utilizing it. Like I know some people have released some games utilizing this library, which makes me super happy. But the biggest challenge I'm dealing with is essentially time. I have my own game I'd like to work on. I have that tool I mentioned before, and I'm supporting this library. And there's just a lot to do.
Yeah.
And it's a lot for one person. So the biggest challenge I have is finding the time to do all the things with Ebitten UI that I want to do. And you asked about contributors. Oh, yes, I would absolutely love contributors. Contributors are my best friends.
Sure. Well, I think that Ibid engine will probably gain some traction, especially if they continue to what you were saying earlier. If they remove the SeaGo dependencies, I mean this is our library to build game in Go, the native one, the one that is pure Go. It's something I'm seeing a lot of traction with Go lately. I would say in the last, I would, you know, eight to 10 months, there's something going on.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. There's been an influx of people. Like my own personal Discord's grown quite a bit in the past 6 months as well. You know, I think it's almost doubled in size. I mean, it's not huge, but still, doubling size is kind of nice.
Yep. So yes, I think that if they are getting traction, then you know, by ricochet, you will receive a lot of those people that want to build game, and they will need some UI, and this library seems to be very very easy to use.
I hope so, on both counts.
Right.
All I know is I'm going to keep working on the library. I'm working on it for my own game, so there's no point for me to ever stop working on this library. So it's going to continue to get updates. Not as fast as I'd like, but because, you know, there's only so much time in the day, but it will always be maintained.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I mean, this is probably the easiest way to maintain a project if you're using it yourself. What about your game? I mean, is it available? Can people, if some curious people want to see what it is, can they see it?
So yes, they can, but it's only a link on my Discord at this point. It's a link to a private itch.io download. I've left it like that because at this point it's mostly a tech demo. So you can log in, you can create your character, pick your character's faces. It has like an auto patcher, which was also a lot of fun to build in Go, by the way. It does all of the standard like MMO things, but it doesn't like have AI for the NPCs yet.
Right.
It doesn't have leveling up yet, but it does have like the animations. You can run around, you can see your friends run around, you can talk to them, you can send private messages to them, that kind of stuff. So I really haven't pushed it out there because I just don't feel like it's in a place where most people would have fun playing it. If you wanted to check it out, absolutely. I keep the server running all the time, just because I think it's neat that it's out there. If anyone did want to check it out, there is a link at the top of the Discord for the game.
Sure, we will have your Discord link in the show note for sure. What is Autopatcher? I'm sorry, I don't know that.
So it's an application that runs on your system. So when you start the game, you actually start the auto patcher. And what it's doing is it's checking to see if there's a new version of the game. Or assets. Yeah, if there are, it will prompt you to download them. It'll, you know, hit the download button and it will download all the individual pieces, upload the game, and then restart the game using those new assets.
So I'm a little bit curious now about this. If you allow me a couple of questions,
of course.
So when a user start the game, so actually are they starting the auto patcher process, or they are starting the game and the game start the auto patcher? How does it work?
So when they download the game, they're actually downloading the auto patcher, and then you hit the auto patcher runs. It says, "Hey, I don't have all the game assets." You hit the download button, it will actually download the game and all the assets, like the rest of it. So the initial download is actually really small, but everything else, you know, takes a little bit of time, and then it will only update the pieces that have changed since the last time you ran it, right?
Okay, but let's say we are 6 months later. When I launch the game, what am I launching? Am I launching the auto patcher or the game itself?
The patcher.
Okay, it's always the patcher. So the patcher, yeah. The auto patcher is responsible to start the game as well.
Yeah. So the auto patcher right now is handling making sure the game assets are up to date, And it's also handling the general login. So doing the username, password kind of stuff, and confirming that you have a proper token, and then passing that on to the actual game process.
Is it two separate Go binaries?
It is.
And I guess that you build the autopatcher with Ibiton UI as well.
I do.
That's cool. That's cool.
Actually, that autopatcher was my main motivation, my first motivation to build a text box widget, because that didn't come with the library either, like the ability to have like a paragraph, you know, like with a scroll bar and stuff.
Okay, so you're showing the latest game update and whatnot in there?
Exactly.
Right. That sounds fun. I mean, for how long have you been working on your game?
So I've spent about 9 months total working on it, and I haven't had a chance to work on it in like 6 months, yeah. Which is annoying.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, life and working on other libraries and tools, sure, and stuff. But I'd say a total of about 9 months between all the things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... That sounds pretty much. It's a huge investment. I see that. It's not like I'm building a huge game or what. But just I always wanted to do that, and yeah, it's fun. I mean, if you haven't done that, listener here, I mean, let's try it. It's very fun to build a game.
It really is, and honestly, I chose one of the dumbest games for a solo developer to ever make. Like when I chose this, I absolutely knew the chances of me actually completing it were almost nothing,
right,
but I don't care. That's the entire reason I picked it in the first place, is because I want a task that I can continually work on and improve and make better. And it's a fun hobby for me, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's another one of those, it will always keep getting updates. It may be slow, but it will keep getting updates because it's fun. It's fun for me.
yeah, totally. All right, Mark, is there anything that I missed? Do you want to, anything that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Just anyone who utilizes the library, feel free to join my Discord. I'm always happy to help anyone that has any questions. And if there's something you need that's not there, I'm always willing to look into adding it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will take this occasion to remind everyone that, you know, when you are using a library and you like it, it's very nice just to, you can open an issues, you can talk with the maintainer. As a maintainer myself, you know, there's no small contributions. Just reach out and see if you can help in any way, and this is very appreciated.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, one more thing, if you don't mind, there's a really cool repo in GitHub called Awesome eBit Engine, and it has a list of like all of the game related libraries you could possibly want for working with eBitten. It's amazing. I'll send you the link, and hopefully you can add it to this, because I think everyone would like to see it.
Oh yeah, and I'm like super curious all of a sudden, myself as well. So yeah, send me the link. We will have that on the show notes.
Yeah.
So all right, Mark, thank you very much. That was really nice. Maybe you can return in a couple of months and see how things are going. I find it very interesting to talk about game development and Go. I mean, this is not a topic, I think, that that we are used to associate with Go, and we have very great libraries.
Oh yeah, definitely, and there's more added all the time. So
yeah, totally. So thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we can talk later.
Yeah, definitely. It was good talking to you.
All right. All right, that's it for this week. I would really appreciate if you can talk or share about this podcast. It's always helpful. Also, another way to support the show is by purchasing my course. There's always a link in the show notes. So on that, see you next week.